Come on now.
Hi, I'm out for my walk in the woods behind where I live, my regular evening walk with Alan the Whippet. We've come out this evening. It's a beautiful, beautiful spring evening. There's a huge bed of green growing up between the trees, which will soon become a sea of blue when the bluebells come in at this time of year. It signifies in nature a sense of hope, and hope is a theme which runs through the conversation I have with my next guest on the Bokomi podcast. Dr. Jeff Rediger is the author of Cured, The Remarkable Science and Stories of Spontaneous Healing and Recovery. Alan, can you stop digging right by my feet? He's found something in a hole with some bark. Alan, stop it. Thank you. So Jeff has written a book called Cured, The Remarkable Science and Stories of Spontaneous Healing and Recovery. He is an instructor in psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and medical director for the McLean Southeast Adult Psychiatric Program. He's also a master of divinity, and he got his degree from Princeton Theological Seminary. And it's that balance of body and spirit which runs through the conversation that I had with Jeff last week, just as we were getting into the stride of lockdown and trying to understand the implications of what this means for everyone, how it affects our relationships, how it affects the way we see the world. And looking through the lens of his work, I found it's particularly poignant when he talks about connectedness between human beings, how that affects our immune system. And in the light of what Daniel Levitin said, he said that loneliness is the single biggest killer of the elderly. What we're dealing with now is we look for hope, we look for light at the end of the tunnel, we look for an exit, a way out of COVID. Everybody is asking the government to come up with a date, a way out, some kind of plan, but we're having to make it up as we go along. And that means that we are falling back on our mental health and our reserves of stoicism, of resilience, of spirit. So the mind and the body become very entwined. And that's what is at the heart of Dr. Jeff's book, the balance that we constantly take through our daily lives is the balance between our physical health and our mental health, and how our mental health, our spirit, I suppose, for want of a better word, affects our immunity and therefore our ability to fight off disease. Now, this isn't just hokum, this is scientific fact. And we've known about this for years. Sorry, doctors have known about this for years. So what happens when we're cut off from the people whose daily interaction affects our lives in a positive way? What can we draw upon? This is the conversation I started with Jeff. I asked him, where did the idea of separating the mind and the body begin? My name is Richard Kilgariff, and this is my Bokomi podcast.
Where did mankind's approach to disease begin?
Yes.
Both the spiritual and the physical.
So there's a lot of different places to start, but one of the major places to start was back with David Hume back several centuries ago. He did both a service and a disservice. And actually what he did was really a service. He divided mind and body very sharply from each other and said that in that day, the church really held a predominant worldview over scientists. And he said, well, okay, the mind is separate from the body. So let's give the mind to the church, the soul to the church, and then that allowed the early scientists to be free to actually study the body and actually begin doing autopsies and that sort of thing. Because prior to his work, there was a deep belief that if you cut up a body in dissection, that you're cutting up the soul. And so he did a real service by establishing this difference between mind and body. We interpreted his work with a more harsh chasm between mind and body than he actually believed. And we have lived with that chasm now for the last few hundred years. What's wonderful is that we now know that the mind does affect the body and the body does affect the mind. The hormones that our body creates and secretes do affect our mood. Ask a woman who has a period every month whether her mood is affected by her hormone changes. And even though doctors don't often credit that as being real, we know it is real. And there's a lot of women who actually need more understanding of the medical profession in that regard. and vice versa. So what's exciting is that those that sharp chasm between mind and body is breaking down very rapidly, with research being built on both ends, from the mind towards the body and vice versa. And in the research that I've done, I see how important how we feel at a deep level about ourselves and about the universe and about our relationships with others. It plays an important role in what's possible for us to heal and how motivated we are and are to find pathways of healing.
And we see healing as well in collective thought. We were just talking about disease. Yes. On an individual and a global scale, and how your work is predominantly with individuals, but at the moment we're suffering from a global pandemic.
That's right.
You mentioned this, in, there's a thread through Cured, which is spiritual and hopeful. And you say very directly, we need hope in medicine.
Yes.
It's a very powerful, quite a controversial thing to say for a scientist and a psychiatrist. You're saying, we'll just hope for the best. I know you don't mean that, but the word is loaded.
Yeah,
is this one of your sessions? Oh, don't worry. Yeah. It's a loaded, very simple, eloquent, articulate phrase, which really resonated with me. Now, I mean, you couldn't have known when you were writing Cured how much hope we really need.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, as doctors, we're taught to not give false hope, and that's important and valuable. But we also need to know how to give grounded, ethical hope that's rooted in real medical evidence, because hope and faith and the positive emotions are such an important part of what gives us the motivation to find a pathway or to have the opportunity to heal. And so grounded hope is important, I believe. I don't want to give false hope ever, but I think as doctors, we need to know how to give genuine hope that's rooted in medical evidence.
People collectively learn about the past through stories, and they project their present selves into the future together through the imagination.
That's right.
Our story is developing rapidly, so quickly every day, it's quite hard for us to process it, isn't
right.
it? What would be your advice as a psychiatrist to our listeners to how to process this daily barrage of new evidence and new stories as the pandemic explodes?
Yeah, I think there are times when we need to turn off the news and the TV. I think having information is important, but I think the relentless news cycles, we need to understand that we are wired to see threat before we see what's right that's going on. And so 10 times more bad news is reported than good news. There are wonderful things going on in the world. And it is so wonderful and healing to see the things that people are doing to reach across the divide, even though we need to socially distance right now. But there are people who are finding ways to touch the lives of those who are isolated in their homes and their apartments, who are lonely, finding ways to meet the needs of others. Those are all beautiful stories, and they're going on more than is being reported in the news. You know, the news runs by the mantra, if it bleeds, it leads, because that gets our attention. But it's so important that we know when to turn off the TV, reduce our stress, remind ourselves what's really true. We will get through this. It's a very different physiology to be in fight, flight, or freeze, where you have the secretion of your stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline and norepinephrine. That's one physiology, but it numbs your immune system. And so the brilliant cells of your immune system can't work efficiently and crisply when you're in fight or flight. And so to know when to turn off the news, when to find ways to relax and connect in an authentic way with the people that you love and have contact with, that is a very different physiology. It's the parasympathetic and not fight or flight. Parasympathetic is about when you smile, when you make eye contact with somebody, as you and I are now, your eyes glisten, you bend your lips into a smile. That's the vagus nerve of the parasympathetic. And that is a very different physiology, where dopamine is released, where serotonin is released, where oxytocin is released. Oxytocin is the bonding molecule. That's what connects us to each other. That is something that the immune system loves and thrives on. Serotonin is what reduces anxiety and depression. Your parasympathetic and your immune system thrive on that. The same is true for dopamine, the pleasure pathway. Your immune system thrives on the secretion of these kinds of molecules, and your immune system cells with all those brilliant cell subtypes, they work very quickly and correctly in that kind of hormonal environment.
So the collective, we're talking on the level of the individual at the moment where we're dealing with things, and I've noticed connecting and talking to loved ones much more now, and we're finding our way through, and ingenuity is coming to the fore. You deal with your family situation, you're close, then you look to the neighbors and next door, kind of like the way news does work, you know, right. And the way local news works is your empathy sort of glows out to the community. Right. And if you believe in humanity and you have hope in humanity, that's what's happening. And then that immunity, I suppose, that becomes the herd immunity. We deal with the threat.
Beautifully said.
Yeah. Well, I think you say a lot better in your book, but I think projecting your knowledge and the work that you've done over the last 17 years onto the present day is absolutely fascinating. But what you're saying about smiling is funny, because I frown a bit when I'm listening, and I'm quite friendly in person. But I had a boss when I was starting out as a news reporter. I've told this story before, but he always used to smile at me. And I found out that his psychiatrist had told him for his anger management to smile when he didn't like someone or didn't like what he was saying.
That's funny.
Because he'd thrown a typewriter. This is how long ago it was. I think I'm libeling anyone. He'd thrown a typewriter through a newsroom window and had been sent to anger management classes. And every day he'd come smiling at me.
That's funny.
But what you're saying about that infectiousness, the smile, the laugh, we're finding a cure, aren't we?
Yeah. Yes.
Isn't a pathological approach. We're trying to find, we're just rapidly developing. So you seem, even though you probably deal with unhappiness in the broadest sense, or tragedy and threat a lot, what keeps you hopeful and happy? Why are you, was it your upbringing? Because you had an Amish upbringing. Did that help?
Yeah, well, I think actually, no, that was a very difficult experience for me. There was a lot of trauma back there. I think what's true is studying these people for so many years and seeing that it wasn't the doctors and medications that got them better. They really made deep changes in their lives. And it's been so inspiring for me to see these stories and to see what they did and the approach they took and the faith they found. And that has deeply affected me. Now I also, I'm not really a meditator, but I'm certainly a contemplative. I think about the research, the stories I read, I journal, I reflect on things, and that's very restorative for me. I have long days. My days start at McLean early, and that's a full-time job, and then I'm also the chief of behavioral medicine at Good Samaritan Medical Center, which is a large urban medical center in the Boston area. And so my days go late into the night, and I think what recharges me, what gives me so much energy, is really that contemplative work and the stories that I've uncovered with studying these people who have medical evidence for these remarkable recoveries, and beginning to integrate those factors into my own life has changed my own health at every level. And so it has given me a level of vitality that is unusual, but it's because of these remarkable individuals I've been exposed to.
So it's the human stories rather than any drug or stimulus or medication that we find our connection in. So how do we counterbalance that? Because the fear, and it is fear, raw fear, that we have of being disconnected from each other. There's a lot, I don't know, it's probably similar to what's happening all around the world. And oddly, that connects us now. It's breaking down political barriers.
That's right.
And so you and I can have a conversation about isolation or lockdowns or food supply that are exactly the same where you are as where we are now. That's a big threat though, isn't it? I'm noticing it. My limbic system is a little bit overtuned, but I'm noticing the way people look at each other on the street is either friendliness in order to indicate you're okay, you know, I'm here for you in the broadest sense, or slight suspicion, you know, on the closed. And it's fascinating to watch. Are you having that where you are?
Oh, very much so. And I think there's some people who, this is going to continue to change probably, but some people don't really understand the importance right now of social distancing, for example. And so I was at a health food store on Saturday, and the staff were telling me how stressful their jobs are right now because some people will come up and want to give them a hug and that sort of thing. And that's what they have historically always done. They want to do that, but the staff have to try to stay connected, but also say, no, please stay 6 feet away. I'm around so many people. I need to make sure that I don't get ill or that I am a communicator or a transmitter of disease, even if I don't have symptoms. And so that has been challenging to negotiate that with people. And so to communicate that we care, but also that we need to maintain some distance right now, we need to find creative ways to deepen our connection, even though we need to socially distance. And that's a challenging transition for all of us right now.
As an educational science communicator, do you think that it's a language issue? Because social distancing is a broad term. It's an adverb. You know, it's a it's adverbial. So it's not. It's if they said, you know, if there were yellow lines as there are in some stores, to indicate this distance. I mean, on the roads, you have to show how close you need to be or not to be to the car in front.
That's
We don't have that. We don't have
We don't. Right. That's a good way to say it.
And I think if we build up a sort of tolerance or we understand these things, I know exactly what you mean about the stores, because it is here, I think, in Western culture. I mean, you talk in the book about the you know, how the two ideas are coming together now, because well, not because of, you didn't know it then, but I see the philosophies of healing and spirituality from East and West coming together because of coronavirus. In the store on the front, you know, in the front of society, you're worried about being impolite. And I've had this debate, we have it at home, I just had it this morning. We were saying, well, where do you draw the line between upsetting someone and not potentially transmitting the disease either way? My mother-in-law fell over on the street the other day, just crossing the street, and someone went to help her. And she went, don't touch me!
Wow. You know?
And she was so worried afterwards that she'd offended.
Yeah. The person. Yes. It's learn how to communicate authentic appreciation for connection and find ways to genuinely connect with others at the same time we're maintaining this distance. It's a skill we need to continue to work on because we need those connections. Those connections are great for our immune systems, and we are all in this together. And you are absolutely right. You and I can talk across the ocean right now, and we're experiencing many of the same things. So in some ways, this is an opportunity for all of us to connect at a level of our universal humanity in a way that we never have. And let's make the most of this because we all need each other. But it is also requiring some social distancing as well. So we have to get creative about this.
And that is the beauty of humanity, isn't it? It's our ability to be creative, to learn from the past, live in the present, and imagine the future together.
That's so, right. I mean, and we will get through this. We've gotten through many hard things before. We will get through this, but let's get through it together. And let's let love win the day rather than our fears.
I'll get a t-shirt with that on, I think. Jeff, thank you very much.
That's great. Thank you.
I'll speak to you soon. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Be well. Okay, you too.
Thank you. Cheers.
See you.
I'm Richard Kilgariff, and that was my Bokomi podcast with Dr. Jeff Rediger. Stay safe. Bye for now. Alan, come on.
Alan?
Yeah.
They always play together.
Oh, okay.
But do you know what? The other day I saw a dog that I thought was...